Hello and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we welcome back Dr. Mark Regneris, sociology professor at the University of Austin, Texas. His main fields of study are sexual behavior, relationships, and religion, and he's probably most famous for his somewhat controversial study, New Family Structures, which we discussed in last week's episode. This week, part two of our conversation with Dr. Mark Regneris. If you don't mind, we'll move a little bit to your more current work.
All right.
Now that we've discovered all the evils in your past, we'll move on. But so you have a new book you're working on.
A new book that came out last September was called Cheap Sex, Transformation of Men, Marriage, and Monogamy. And I'm about halfway through a book called The Future of Christian Marriage.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what cheap sex is about. Hmm. I gather we have a kind of a current way that we're living, and that is doing something to men.
Right.
Is that and so
men and women, but you know, women didn't fit in the alliteration of men, marriage, and monogamy.
Oh, I see. Fair
men,
enough.
Women, yeah. Marriage, and monogamy.
Okay. So what's going on? Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah. So that's a study of 24 to about 35-year-olds. It's 100 in-depth interviews and a survey of 15,738 adults. Ranges from age 18 to 60. So I sometimes blow it out to look at the full spectrum of adulthood. It was really a study of what I call the mating market. Right? Not a lot of people like to talk about this kind of thing, but it's a real thing. Everybody who's unmarried is, you know, and interested in a relationship is on this market. Basically, there's a marriage corner of this market. There is a sort of sex corner of this market, and in between there is this kind of a fuzzy area of. Relationships of unclear commitment levels, right? So I've studied this, and the book is focusing on the role of three technologies in shaping the marriage market, and that is artificial contraception, the uptake of it, sort of the advent and uptake of digital pornography, and online dating as kind of like a technology that sort of exacerbates some of the problems that were already present.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the punchline of the book is that, wow, we see how contraception, not just because individuals take it, right? This is a social thing, a little bit like Paul VI had written about in Humanae Vitae. It's a social phenomenon. The uptake of contraception leads to people expecting everybody in the market sort of to be on it, so to speak, right? And so it shapes how people date, right? And it shapes what people expect of first dates, second dates, third dates for sure. So it brings sex earlier into the relationship. So we may think, oh, the culture has corroded and things are just going to the dogs. But well, we can track how it's corroded and why, frankly. So It what I call the price of sex, right? Because we actually all do price it. I mean, it's like it's either valuable or it's something quite less than valuable. It's cheap, right?
Yes.
So obviously the title of the book is Cheap Sex because I conclude that the price of sex in the wider mating market has dropped dramatically over the last 50 years. First by the advent and uptake of contraception. I shouldn't really say the advent. It's really the uptake. I mean, the fact that it exists, if it wasn't used, wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
The uptake of pornography, which functions the same way. It cheapens sex. You could say it like theoretically it cheapens it, but no, actually, really, it does this. I mean, because women consider it competition, right? We're talking economic language there, right?
Yeah.
Because it forces them to consider doing things they otherwise wouldn't wish to have done earlier in a relationship for the hope that this relationship might turn into something, right? And then you add in online dating technologies, right? And you can say, well, those can be used for good. Sure, I agree. Their underlying logic I don't think can really be reformed because what they do is sort of they take the whole person and boil it down to a handful of commodities that you can siphon through quickly, right? So what does she look like? Does he look like he has any money? Does he dress nice, right? And so I can swipe through these things rather quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I take a look at a person like, swipe right or left, I should say, isn't it, on Tinder?
I've never been on Tinder, but you know, thanks for asking.
Oh, they look pretty good. Swipe right. You know, it's a you cycle through people, treating them like a commodity.
Yes.
Quickly, and right. It doesn't really matter what platform you do this on. Mm-hmm. Some are better on this than others, but all of them at bottom are commodifying
the
human person.
Yes.
Okay? And that's not good. So the book is about these three technologies and how they have combined in some ways, and they're distinctive technologies, to create a mating market that has become a real mess. And it's delaying marriage, causing mass confusion in the sort of dating game, right? People like don't know what to expect. You know, oh, he's not what he made himself out to be. All these sorts of deceptions that are going on, right? And then we're somehow surprised that humans can be deceptive.
I wonder if there's any empirical data on whether or not these technologies have led to people having more sex or just less marriage.
I would say less marriage. In fact, there's new data from the General Social Survey, which is one of the oldest and best nationally representative surveys administered every 2 years. Data from 2016 documented a statistically significant drop in sex, both among married couples and cohabiting couples in the United States. A lot of that we can chalk up to this competition that technology and smartphones have for them, right? Which that makes some degree of sense. At the same time, I pushed back in an article in First Things called The Death of Eros. It was about a year ago. Where I talk about how as we move toward this model of marriage, which is not complementarian, but it's, I should say complementary, it's egalitarian and interchangeable. Like he does the same thing that she does and vice versa. And we become measurably less interesting to each other because we do the same things.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, people are attracted to difference. Right?
Yes.
And so I think as we move towards being the same, we lose interest in each other.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so it's not surprising that Americans, for all the sensualization of life, they're actually having intercourse less often than their grandparents did. Not radically less often.
No, but it seems almost a Chestertonian irony that
it is.
The more you sexualize society, the less actual sexual intercourse people end up having.
Right. And so people would say, oh, doesn't that undermine your thesis and cheap sex? It's like, no, because in the wider mating market, sex is still cheap, right? But like people have, as they move forward towards the maturation of a relationship, they're losing interest in each other. They're losing interest in the sexual union, and we were seeing it in the data.
So the new book that's coming. When do you expect the new book to be
out? Oh, probably late 2020.
So late 2020.
Don't put it in your calendar.
Not on your Christmas list this year. Okay, so late 2020 though. But it's about Christian marriage, and I'm interested. That seems like following along the titles of the things you've written. That looks like a change of direction.
It's a bit of a change, and also kind of a throwback to what I used to. I used to be a sociologist of religion 10-12 years ago, and I'm kind of getting back to my roots a little bit. That is an international project, in part because I had felt like I had understood what's going on in the United States. It's somewhat grim. Maybe there are some good things going on elsewhere, right? So it's based on mostly on interviews, a little bit on surveys, but mostly interviews in Mexico, the United States, Poland, Spain, Russia, Lebanon, and Nigeria. All places that have significant Christian populations of some sort. I mean, we got evangelicals, Pentecostals, Catholics, and Orthodox. And my interest is in unmarried 20-somethings or early 30-somethings or recently married ones, and trying to understand how the sort of the global slowdown in marriage, I mean, marriage rates are tumbling everywhere, not just in the first world, how those affect Christians who, unlike lots of other people, have deep faith biblical reasons and also sort of faith community reasons for esteeming marriage. And most of them want to get married. So what's going on among them elsewhere? So that's the project. That's the one I'm working on most. And I'm on the way over here, I was fiercely typing chapter 5. So it's the portrait. I mean, to give you a hint at what it's going to say is there's a lot of uncertainty out there, and it's almost everywhere. So one of the things that for all the globalization of the church, you are seeing this phenomenon that Christians in Mexico are not that different from Christians in the United States, not that different from Christians in Moscow, mm-hmm. Beirut, Lagos. There's wide, not so much skepticism about marriage, but apprehension.
Okay.
They're not sure that it's going to work out for them. There's a lot of divorce. I mean, globally, in the past 20, 25 years, that economic situations are unstable, but frankly, they've been unstable a lot of places for a very long time. So I don't really attribute a lot of it to economic instability because, poverty was endemic and now it's diminishing some. Theoretically, if men's earnings were the key to their marriageability, then we should be seeing more people get married, and we're not. We're seeing the other thing happen. So I think more of it is kind of in the culture of a globalizing culture around skepticism about marriage. They want it, but they're apprehensive about it. They expect a lot from it, more than people used to expect.
So if that's a description of the moment that we're in, do you have any prescription?
Prescription. That's chapter 6. I haven't written that
okay.
one yet. I do see some good things out there and some difficult things. For example, in Beirut, it's the only, frankly, big economy going on in the country. The Maronite Catholics there, prices are rising. Salaries are not that rising that quickly. Expectations for a wedding are really huge. But you don't get the social support that you used to get from your community. So you have to produce the big wedding, but you don't get the benefit of their help in the future. So it's at a toxic moment, I think, there. Because the average age of marriage in Lebanon is higher than it is in the United States, rising well into the 30s. So this is not good, right? I've heard some. So one of the things that is a mixed bag is, here in California, you see a little bit of it in the Latino community, living at home with your parents until you get married, right? This is not a thing that most Americans do, right? They send their kids off to college, which is in a different city. So in Spain and Mexico, we see more people sort of staying at home with their parents. That gives them parents oversight into their dating life, which is typically a good thing. At the same time, it can lend itself to a kind of a lethargy among, especially among men, right?
Why go? Mom cooks really well.
Yeah. So there's that. So you combine that with kind of the cheap sex story is happening in other countries too,
right?
So if you can access sex and your mother still does your laundry and cooks your dinner, you're just not in a hurry to leave, right? So that is – it's a mixed bag, that kind of phenomenon. One of the interesting things is I've been impressed with Russian Orthodox their articulation of a vision of the good of marriage. I mean, it was really striking. I mean, it's a very small percentage of the population.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they consider themselves necessarily embattled because they're so small. But the priestly training I've seen and heard about is, I was taken aback by it.
Really?
So, they're quoting C.S. Lewis, and I thought, wow, this is a...
Isn't that cool?
It's different. So, and of course, the Polish are the most devout probably of anywhere in the sample. But clearly, if you, including Russia and Lebanon and Nigeria, anywhere in this world, you've got a burgeoning middle class, so you'll have some of the same globalized problems that you're seeing in the United States marriage market, or we're exporting them. So,
Well, I know you have another thing you got to get to, so I'm going to say thank you. Mark Regnerus, thank you very much for discussing your work with us here. You just don't seem to be the monster that I expected to meet when you came. We do appreciate it, and thanks to all our listeners for joining us on Catholic Answers Focus.